Welcome to CUV.com. I'm your host, David Medore. Our candidate today is Debbie Peterson. Debbie is running for state representative. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you.
What district? 49th district,
the
49th
district, correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
That's right.
Great.
Thank you.
So how many state legislators are there in our in the House?
Oh, gosh. That's a trick question. There are 90. There are 98.
98?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow, that's
yes.
A big body.
It is.
And there's like, what, 30-some in the, is there one in the Senate?
49 in the Senate. And there are 49 districts. It happens to be that my district is the 49th district, but there are 49 districts in the state. And there are two representatives from each district and then one senator from each district.
Okay.
And so 49 senators and then 98.
Okay, so there's more than one average per county. So it's not by county.
Right, it's not by county. Yeah, okay. That's exactly correct. And sometimes it's kind of interesting because actually we have that here where a district will actually fold into two. So two counties, yeah. So.
Okay, like King County?
Well, yes, and like Cowlitz County and Clark County. We have that here, yeah.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So kind of interesting.
Okay, so you're running for the state legislative body, which mm-hmm. basically makes all law, mm-hmm. well, it's supposed to make all law in our state. But we have, let's just jump right in to stormwater issues, because that's what is basically putting a near standstill to almost all development mm-hmm. in Clark County.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem there, at least the impact on us, is that rather than the state legislature making this law, we have an unelected body, bureaucrats, Department of Ecology, making law.
Yeah.
And not coming back with their rules to be approved by the state legislature.
Yeah,
that's really. Would you change that if you could?
That's really a problem. And actually, almost every Republican candidate that I have heard has said that. And they go from mild indignation to extreme indignation. And I hear many Republican candidates, at least down here in southwestern Washington, say that they would abolish the Department of Ecology. And one of the reasons why they have such concerns, and I think it's really valid, is that there are 44 people who work for the Department of Ecology. And that's a very large staff, in particular when there's no product actually happening. Like, for instance, when your people come to work, they know that at the end of the day, they're going to probably have some kind of product that they have to make or
something.
Mm-hmm. They produce something. And there's a lot of self-satisfaction with that. With the Department of Ecology, they have to have validation for why they come to work. And that validation is producing something. What they produce are regulations. And so they come out with thousands and thousands and thousands of regulations. And I forgot the number. It was just tens of thousands over the last years. And so they are applied to businesses, they're applied to landowners, they're applied to everybody who moves and breathes in this state. And as a consequence of that, it's really put a stranglehold on businesses and on people who want to do things with their property. And so it becomes not just a business issue, but it becomes a property rights issue too. And so I'm of the mindset that we need to really take a hard look at that department. And we need to really push some things off the table. You probably know this. Probably other candidates have talked to you about this, but our Department of Ecology is so strict, and they are so strident in their rules and regulations. They are so they're such producers that actually the federal government doesn't oversee this state at all, because they recognize that we are over the top on our Department of Ecology.
Are we the only state that way?
I think there maybe is one other, maybe two.
So we're at the one extreme of the spectrum.
We are completely at one extreme. And you know, it's everybody says this, every candidate's saying it, but it's because it's true. It really comes down to jobs. And when we have one government department filled with bureaucrats, not elected officials, so there's nothing we can do about it, when we have that happening, and we really have no recourse, because they're kind of invisible. And so when we have one department really putting these onerous regulations on us, it's really the tail wagging the dog, and we need to do something to correct that.
Mm-hmm. So. Don Benton, Rick, he was in his interview, what he said was that if you have a Department of Ecology, that's making rules, that's basically supposed to be implementing the law that is passed by the legislature, mm-hmm. that those rules can't just go out and just do anything you want because there's no check, there's no balance.
That's
they
right.
could just simply be dictating, and that's a form of tyranny and oppression and just interfering. There's nothing to keep people's lives from being interfered. So his fix was to, even if you keep the Department of Ecology and says your job is to make sure you protect the environment, mm-hmm. that you make rules, and those rules end up going back to the legislature.
Yes. That's
the legislature
check.
Says, okay, yep, we'll adopt this or we won't, and that way you have accountable people making law.
That's the check. That's exactly right.
The impact is, in this case, we have, I've been studying the form of government we have here in Washington State, and the way that it was originally intended and set up is that you have the legislature, and their job is to set general guidelines, to set basic processes in place and boundaries that say that you got to do these basic functions without being too specific. Mm-hmm. And then the counties then can, each county is different. They have strength, they have different resources mm-hmm. and different kind of characteristics they have to deal with.
They do.
And that leaves the counties able to have localized government, mm-hmm. tailor their responsibilities, all of their law to their particular area. Mm-hmm. In this case, we've got that violation of that principle.
Yeah.
And we have this very detailed, so detailed, micromanaging from a bureaucracy mm-hmm. telling the county you exactly what you have to do. And the counties are just simply left with very little recourse to tailor, to survive.
Well, and often they're unfunded mandates, so they're
yes.
asking the counties to implement these things, without the funding to implement them. Mm-hmm. And so, it's actually a double whammy because, number one, you have these onerous implementations that DOE wants us to do. And then on top of that, there's no funding for it. And so the funding has to come from somewhere, from the county. And where mm-hmm. do they pull that from? They pull it from health services. They pull it from other departments and state protection. So it's just terrible. It's terrible. And what you say is really true. Because the legislature doesn't come back to the legislature, we have these bureaucrats instituting these policies, and there may be legislators who love these policies, mm-hmm. but nobody knows that. And there may be legislators who are actually recommending these policies, mm-hmm. but because they don't come back and we don't get to see a vote on that, mm-hmm. we don't know that. And if it comes back to the legislature, then we have a chance to say, you know, you voted for this, and we don't like it, and now we're going to...
It's accountability.
It's accountability sure. and transparency.
Well, on the other side of it, those that are take the other end of the spectrum, they'll say, well, if you want to restrict or abolish or somehow bring the Department of Ecology's rules back into the oversight of the legislature, that means that you really don't care about our environment. That
yeah.
means that you're there to... just simply say, forget the environment, be irresponsible, and just jobs and business is more important than anything else. Forget about the future of our, what we're going to leave with our, that whole extreme. How do you find the balance, and how do you answer that?
Okay, first of all, that's not true, and I want to give you an example of that. There's a gentleman up in the northern part of our county, and he works a lot with wildlife. And what he's found out, there's a company up there that is allowed to just kind of slough off their waste product. And what that's done is it's causing hoof rot in any kind of an animal, like a deer or antelope or any of those kinds of animals. And so these animals are really suffering from that. It just rots away their feet. And because nothing is transparent, and because nobody is being held accountable, and this has been taking place for many years, as a consequence of that, we have this terrible situation up on Mount St. Helens, and nobody is coming forward to correct that because nobody has to. And if we had somebody accountable, if the DOE had accountability through the legislature, somebody by now would have stepped up and said, we need to fix that. And I can tell you, I'm really involved in this because the gentleman who is really concerned about this, he comes to the city council, and he does a lot of public comment. And he comes mostly about these animals. He, out of his own pocket, he feeds them. He does all of these things to try to protect them. And he's been doing this at city council for at least 3 or 4 years.
Well, sometimes the fixes are worse than the cure is worse than the disease. The unintended consequences.
Yeah, and so we need to, we really need to get that back, full circle, back to the legislature.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay. Other major issues. What's your top major issue that we need to do something about in our state?
Well, the top issue is the budget, and it's sort of the overarching issue. And then after that, these other things come under that, which is because of the budget, jobs are affected. Because of the budget, education is affected. Because of the budget, health is affected. And so, the overarching issue is the budget. From 2004 to 2008, the budget increased by 35%. That is gigantic. And I talk to people and I say...
That's more than a third in 4 years.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I talk to people and I say, what if your salary increased by 35% in 4 years? And they all, you know, their eyes light up. But then I say, but when the state does that, empty your pockets. Mm-hmm. What's happening is the state has to take and had to take money from businesses, taxes from businesses, regulations from businesses, fees from businesses, and taxes from us. And as a consequence of that, it pulled discretionary funds. And we weren't able to spend the money that we would like to. Businesses weren't able to hire the people that they wanted to because they were busy trying to keep up with the state's budget.
Debbie, I wonder, what is the truth here? Because I talked to Jim Mueller, and Jim Mueller tells voters, I just every meeting I've been in with him, that the budget has been decreasing. Instead of it going this, we're actually doing this. I mean, those are numbers. That's math. Mm-hmm. That's accounting. Mm-hmm. What source and documentation actually will give the bottom line that's irrefutable that will tell us the facts? Well, what are the numbers? Where do we go to get them? Is Jim misunderstanding? Is he talking about something else?
Well, I would say that you could go to the Office of Management and Budget and find the numbers there. Also, in terms of Jim, I can't speak for him, but I can speak for what's happening right now. Right now, this year, we are going to have $2 billion more than what we had last year.
That's with a B.
$2 billion. And what happens is they're still saying, oh, we have to have these cuts. But when they talk about cuts, they actually are talking about not cuts. Like when we talk about cuts, if you're at home and you have a cut, mm-hmm. and you decide, okay, we have to cut our budget, what that means is, okay, we're not going to go out to dinner. Instead of going out to dinner once a week, we're going out to dinner once a month. And that's how we cut our budgets. Or okay, guys, instead of taking a vacation this year, we're going to take a home vacation. That's how we cut our budgets. But for the state, when they say they cut their budget, they have a baseline, and then they have money that they wanted to add to that baseline. So when they cut their budget, what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we can't add to our baseline by, say, 10%. We're going to only add to our baseline by 5%. So they're still adding to their baseline. They're just not adding as much as they wanted to.
So it's a matter of definition of terms. If you want to talk about the budget, just say the budget is the absolute amount of money that we spend. And what I think, what I just wrote down here is to add to this, the text part of this story, the graph that shows time in years,
yep.
versus absolute dollars,
yeah.
spent.
Yeah.
And I guess there's the transportation budget. There's several categories of the budget. We'll, surely, at a glance, we have to see what the actual numbers show that would put that to rest.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Exactly right.
All
yeah.
right. So, what do you do to the? I mean, how do you fix the budget? The budget is.
There's a very simple.
You got spending and you got income. What are you going to do?
There's a simple solution, and probably everybody out there in TV land knows that solution because they do that every day. And it's called the big rock in the jar solution.
Big rock in the jar.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so what you do is you take this jar, okay, and then it represents the finite money that comes into the state in revenue. And then you take all the projects. And every project has validity. And when I was at a town hall, 49th District Town Hall, and it was in 2010, and they were looking at all the budget cuts. And they had people lined out from the microphone all the way to the back of the room, all these people. And you could tell these were needy people. And they would walk up and they would, you know, be begging our legislators, please don't cut budgets. Mm-hmm. And as they presented their cause, every one of them were important, and every one of them had validity. But the problem is, we don't have enough money to do all of them. And so what you have to do, and what we have to do, and what TV Land, people in TV Land do, is they look at the finite money that they have, the jar, and they say, what do we have to pay first? And for most people, it's we have to pay our mortgage. Mm-hmm. If they have a car payment, we have to pay our car payment. Mm-hmm. And so they start putting in those things that they have to, the heat, lights, gas. Then when they're done, then they go, okay, we have maybe some money for recreation, or maybe we have some money sure. for other things. With the budget, we have to do the same thing, and we haven't been doing that. We have to fund those things that are mandated by the state, and we have to look at those first. They can't be the stick that's held over us when the budget drops. It can't be that way. Okay. It can't be a fear. And so you put in this bottle of finite money, this jar, you put education. You put transportation.
Which is a big rock.
That's a big rock.
Another big rock.
That's another big rock. And you put health, and that's another big rock. And then you start putting in these smaller things, like, for instance, doing a study on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and if they are racial. We have a study. We had a study in this state. Are peanut butter and jelly sandwiches racial? I'm not kidding. That I am telling you the absolute truth. And you're laughing. But we spent money on that. Can you believe it? And so when we have funded all the things that we really need to fund, then we start doing these other things.
Okay, so basically you start with the most important thing first, and then they represent the rocks, then you get progressively smaller rocks until then you start jumping in the pebbles and the sand.
And the peanut butter sandwich studies, yeah. Yes.
Okay, because if you put all the sand in first, you can't get the big rocks in.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And our viewers do that. I mean, they have to do that. And why the legislature thinks for at least 15 years that they didn't have to do that is amazing to me. And what's worse is when you are given something, let's say you borrow something from somebody, you take better care of it than you do your own stuff. They are taking care of our money in Olympia, but they are not taking better care of it than they take care of their own money. I'm pretty confident of that because of the way that they're spending. Mm-hmm. That's not right. And I see every day how hard people have to work. I talked to a business owner on, I think yesterday, and I was calling him actually for a donation. And I said, you know, can you donate to my campaign? He said, Debbie, you know what? I just had to let somebody go. Now, I've been talking to this gentleman for over almost a year, and he has been working night and day shaking business for his company all over the country so he wouldn't have to let his guys go. I know how hard he worked not to have to do that. Mm-hmm. And this week he had to do that.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It's awful.
So much of this has to do with just simply having good judgment, which is to sort out priorities from most important to least important. Even in our, this is happening at the federal level, at the state level, at the county level, at the city level, at every level.
It is.
Even in our case, here we are locally, we have a Proposition 1 for a non-essential, something that's non-essential, light rail.
Terrible.
Bus rapid transit. Are they essential compared to law enforcement? For instance, in this county, we have laid off or we've lost 21 sheriff deputies in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So we're cutting sheriff. City of Vancouver is going to close another fire station.
Let me tell you why that's so important. You know, we just go, oh, well, okay, so we're losing sheriffs. Okay, this is why it's so important for us not to lose one position in our corrections. And I talked to a police officer, this was several years ago, and I said, you know, tell me what's going on in your department. And he said, well, let me tell you the good part, and then let me tell you what happens when this doesn't take place. Because we've lost positions, one of the positions that they lost was the compliance officer. And you go, I didn't even know police had a compliance officer. You typically don't think of that, but they do. What happened is this policeman called up his compliance officer and he said, I need to get into this house. I know this is a drug house, but I don't have a reason to search this house. He said, can you come with me? So they drove down to this house. This compliance officer and this officer were not even a block away, and he started laughing, and he goes, you have a warrant right now. And he goes, why? And he goes, see those chickens in their yard? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, they can't have that many within the city limits. Right now you can go in and do the paperwork, and you can go in and check that house out. That compliance officer may have saved a life. And yet we're cutting our police. And the Democrats, and I'm sorry, if you're a Democrat, it's really important this year to really be educated on what's happening in our state because it's so critical, and we're at a cliff. And our Democrats, the legislature's been controlled by the Democrats for the last 15 years. And there are lots of things, which I will talk about later, that we have to show for that. But one of them is this. They use a tactic, and it's a scare tactic. And they use it so that they'll go, oh my gosh, we can't fund police. Oh my gosh, we can't do transportation. We can't do the projects we need to. And they go down the line, we have to cut health care. We have to cut health providers and assistance to the elderly. And they use that tactics to scare you, and it is not right. And first of all, the money would be there if we were actually prioritizing. But for some reason, they chose not to do that a long time ago, and we are reaping the disbenefits of that right now. And so when they talk about police cutting, that is really wrong. And with that one compliance officer, who knows how many officers' lives were saved because they didn't have to go and do something outside of this easy fix. I mean, that's very sobering mm-hmm. when we're talking people's lives.
Yes.
And worse, now that they're able to close that drug house, how many of our civilian lives are saved?
Sure, that's right. Now, you are a teacher, and you care passionately about kids.
I
and
do.
There's a dropout rate in our state. Can you address that?
I'd love to, yeah, thank you. Again, we've had a dropout rate. Right now, this year, it was at 27%. That's the lowest it's been in 15 years. It usually hovers between 30 and 31%. And to me, when we've had a problem for 15 years and it's not solved, something's wrong. I have to ask why. You know, why haven't we done that?
27%. In other words, one in four in that very distant
one
past.
One in three.
One
like
in three
last year.
Student.
Yeah.
Would not finish high school.
No, they drop
in
out.
In our state.
No.
That's the average.
That's the average. And that's a nationwide average. So I don't want to say, oh, we are the worst in the nation. That is a national average. But individually, our state has a responsibility to educate our children. It's in our Constitution. And the thing that I find troubling is I taught fourth grade for 8 years. And I can promise you, there was not one fourth grader in my class that ever said their goal was to drop out of high school. And so what's happening, there are two issues at place here. One of them is an economic issue. When we lose these kids to a dropout rate, these kids, many of them go into drugs, they end up in jail, so we're losing that. I mean, that's just money pulled out. But if they end up working and they stay in the workforce, they are working at a minimum wage. And so we are losing that higher income. So that's the first
thing. Losing the potential for who they could be.
And I want to talk about that later. And so then the second part of that is exactly what you just said. It's their dream. Mm-hmm. When I taught fourth grade, these kids all have dreams. They want to have a home. They want to have a family. They want to have a dependable car. They want to have a job that is interesting for them and that they enjoy and that they can do. And so what happens is when they drop out, that dream goes away. And they're stuck in a low-income job, a dead-end job, and maybe they have to work two jobs or maybe three jobs just to have a part of that dream that they had wanted originally. And the thing that I find very frustrating, and after 15 years of the Democrats in power, I find it frustrating because we have fixes right here in Clark County. We have two wonderful fixes. We have the Skill Center.
Skill Center is fabulous.
It's fabulous. And if you talk to people, if you talk to graduates from there, if you talk to people who hire them, if you talk to people within the school there, it is such a win-win-win. Mm-hmm. It's a win for the employer. It's a win for that student who now has a job where they can actually make a living wage. And it's a win for us, the society. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how wonderful. Why we don't have more of those everywhere within the state is troubling to me. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we have another example here in Clark College. Last spring, I just happened to, by chance, I attended their board meeting. And I would recommend, if you have a chance, go to a Clark College board meeting. It is inspiring. Anyway, I was there in the spring, and it just so happened that was the board meeting where they were getting many awards. It was very impressive. And one of the awards was given by Toyota. This was a national award, and they were given this award for their outstanding preparation that they did for their students to become Toyota mechanics, and then also their job placement right here in Clark College. And so I'm thinking, we can do that, and that's just one part of Clark College. They have many other trainings.
Sure.
Okay. But we should be having all kinds of schools set up for these kids that are at risk or these kids that don't want to maybe continue in school.
How do you fix it?
Oh, first thing I would do is I would look at the education budget and I'd say, okay, tell me what we have. Tell me, do we have any funding available? And if we have even $1 million or $2 or $3 million, I take that money and then I go, and it's going to have to start small, you know, like everything. But if we save, if we can even shave off 2% the first year that I'm in office, how wonderful is that? That represents thousands of students. And so we take that money, we look at the existing schools. Can we use the existing schools after hours or on Saturdays? Can we do that? We look at businesses. I have a friend from high school. He works for Medtronics, and that's kind of a heart, it's a healthcare. That company is amazing in the people that they send out into the community, including my friend. And they do all of this volunteer work, and they teach these kids and adults, too, how to do things. And I'm thinking, we can go ahead and go to businesses and say, tell me what you need, and would you be willing to help us, and would you be willing to take an intern? And so there are these amazing fixes that we could do that we should have been doing at least 15 years ago.
Okay. So, if you could contrast the differences in issues or priorities between you and the other choice, you're running, who's your?
Sharon Wiley is my opponent.
And mm-hmm. she's actually been an appointed incumbent. This is the first time right. she's really facing an election.
Right. No. She was appointed first, mm-hmm. and then she was elected last year, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And now it's time.
For 2 years, yeah.
Okay. So what are the basic differences in priorities or agendas between you two?
Sure. There are some really grave differences, and I think, and we're trying to get that message out, because they're just two different philosophies on how we look at government, and that's really important. And because of that, it really motivates us to look at things very differently. I look at things as how do we solve this problem without putting money into it and without throwing money at it? And if we have to put money into it, what is going to be the best use of our dollar? Because it's not my dollar, it's your dollar. And so that's the thing that I'm going to be looking at. My opponent looks at things and she says, okay, we have the same problem, but I want to solve it by putting lots of money into it. And I want to show you why I say that.
Okay.
I have a document here.
All right.
This is taken off of the website. This is from Evergreen Freedom Foundation, and you can find it. It's on the web. Just go to Evergreen Freedom Foundation, and when you get the website, just put in Big Spender, and it will come up. And so what they do is they look at bills that are passed, and they look at it, what is the cost of that over 10 years? And then they rank the legislators by how much they've either taxed or spent that particular previous legislative session. My opponent, Sharon Wiley, is listed out of the House of Representatives. She is listed as 30. So out of 98 representatives, she is 30th in having the biggest spending. And you can see her number right there. And so I'm saying, you know, that's pretty amazing, especially given the fact that she has only been in office for 1 year. She's setting, I think, a very interesting and I think a very harmful precedent.
In other words, out of all of the whole list.
Out of 98 House.
She is mm-hmm. the number one, being the biggest spender. I'm yes. curious, who is this biggest spender here?
Okay, number one is Reuben Carlyle.
I haven't heard of him either. 22.
But this is significant.
Dollars.
Jim Mohler, he's
oh, yeah.
another representative out of the 49th. He's number eight. And so, you know, the 49th district is really represented in big spenders with Jim mm-hmm. Mohler at eight and Sharon Wiley mm-hmm. at 30. And so I think that's really
yeah.
pretty significant.
Yeah.
And that needs to change, because if that doesn't change, our state is, the way our state is going, it is not sustainable. And so we really need to take a look at really having a change in philosophy.
Okay.
The other thing I'd like to point out, which I think is really telling, especially right now, but at any time in a state's history, there have been times of recession, there have been times of boom times, but regardless of the time, it's really important that we protect our businesses. And the reason for that is because that represents jobs. If a person has a job, they're able to do the things that they want to do. They're able to have their home. And I was talking to someone the other day, and probably the two greatest words that anybody ever hears are, "You're hired." That is just, that is elevating.
In contrast to, "You're fired."
Yeah, that's not. But when people, when someone, and I'll never forget the first big job that I had, it was actually from the Vancouver Housing Authority. And it just was wonderful. And Lou Leinbach, who was just a great boss, he called me up and he goes, "Ms. Peterson, you're hired. We'd like for you to come work for us." And it's elevating. There's a self-esteem that comes from working that nothing else really can replace.
Which is huge for us because we have huge. So many people out of work or underemployed here in across the state, but especially here in our county.
We do. In fact, in our state, we are ranked second worst state in the nation for having small business failures.
You're talking about Clark County?
No, I'm talking about our whole state.
Oh.
In our whole state, if you ranked us, we are 49th from the bottom as having the worst.
You mean out of the 50 states?
Out of 50 states. Yeah, out of 50 states, our state has the worst, second worst ranking for small business failures. And they're either failing or they are moving out of state.
Which should not be the case. We have a great advantage, us being, there's only three states on the west coast of the United States. We have an amazing, beautiful environment here. A lot of reason we have no state income tax. It's one of the very few states that that's
right.
the case.
That's
we
right.
have a so many natural resources mm-hmm. here, and yet we're almost last.
Yeah, we're not quite scraping the bottom of the barrel, but we're real close. And you're right. We have natural resources. We have our ports. We have industrious people. We are third from the top in people who want to start small businesses. We have many entrepreneurs, third from the top in the nation of entrepreneurs who start small businesses here, and yet they cannot thrive.
Well, one of the reasons why it seems is that we confiscate their cash just simply trying to get with fees to try to open a business.
We do. And so one of the differences that I have between Sharon Wiley, my opponent, is this. And this is really significant, probably one of the most significant documents that you'll see in terms of determining your vote. This is from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and it has the website here. And you'll see this is the issue number right here. Now, there were times, because Sharon Wiley is a new legislator, there were times when she could not vote because she was not in office yet. So we're taking those away. But there were five times, or maybe six, when she could have voted. This is the NFIB wish. We wish that they vote this way, because if they do, they are 100% for small businesses.
Which is jobs, employing people.
It's jobs.
Yeah.
It's jobs.
Yeah.
This is how Sharon Wiley voted. They would have liked a no. She voted yes. They would have liked a yes. She voted no. They would have liked a no. She voted yes. You can see, in contrast, completely the opposite of where NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businesses, would have liked for her to vote.
And so what we have here is that we've got the 100% would be pro-business,
mm-hmm.
and she ended up with not just a poor score, 0%.
0%. 0%.
That's not so good for jobs.
It's not so good
Everybody's
for jobs.
Everybody's running on jobs, Debbie.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And yet, how can this, where's the consistency
I know.
Here?
It's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe they're talking
I'm stunned.
About, maybe they're talking about Jim Oler's kind of jobs, because he was bragging the other day that
No,
he was
stop.
Responsible for $1 billion for creating jobs.
No, because you know what Jim Mueller's score is? It's 20%.
Oh.
And he actually, probably had a chance to vote on all these. He's got 20% for supporting small businesses.
Give him some credit, I suppose.
Long-term
debt, we're now $1 billion more in debt, long-term debt, to pay for those jobs that were here and gone, right, maybe a couple hundred, and now it's gone.
It's gone.
It's
yeah.
not sustainable.
And so that's a huge contrast.
We're running long.
Oh, I'm
so
sorry.
So you
okay.
want people to, why don't we let you just simply talk directly to voters.
Okay.
And give your closing statements, wrap it up.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that.
Help them to be informed so that they understand how to, why should they vote
okay.
For you, Debbie, compared to other choices?
Okay.
The other choice.
Let's see. I have that here. I have a closing statement, but I don't know if I can pull it out. So I'll just tell you from my heart. This year, it is really, you're voting between two philosophies. It's not really about candidates. It's really not about me, and it's not about Sharon Wiley, my opponent. It's about philosophies, and that's what you're voting on this year, and actually for every race, because it is very clear-cut, not just in my race, in almost every state, a representative race and Senate race, it's clear-cut. It is a philosophy. Do you want to have the same solutions we've had for the past 15 years? Do you want to have, let's throw more money at it and hope it works out? Or let's take a look at actually solving this problem. And we know from what Gregoire said in terms of education, she said, this is just last year, she said, we've thrown a ton of money at education and look at where we are at. And so if you think throwing money, your money, at a solution with the kind of results we're having is okay, then that would be one philosophy. But if you're going, you know what, we need to change a direction, we need a fresh start, we need to push that reset button. If you are thinking that, then I'm asking that you vote for me. And you're voting not really for me. You're voting for what I'm going to do up in Olympia. I am going to look at our problems. I'm going to say, let's find creative solutions. Let's make our taxpayer dollar, every dime of it, work so that we are not wasting one single dime. I can promise you, I will not support a peanut butter study, peanut butter and jelly sandwich study. I won't do that. And so when you're looking at us, I'm asking that you look at the philosophies. The other piece to this is transparency. It's really important for us to know where our money is going. One of the first things I'm going to do is request performance audits on all of our departments. We need to know what's happening with our education. And the good news is we actually had an audit just several months ago. And we know now that we have 40% of our education budget going to overhead, not to the classroom. That's good information. And we're even blaming anybody. But what we do with that information now is we know that if we just take 1% of that money, that 40%, if we take 1% of that, we can hire 1,000 teachers. So now we have something that we can do with that study. It's the same thing with the Department of Transportation. If we do a performance on that department, what are we going to find? I think we're going to find a lot of interesting things. We're going to find that we've spent a lot of money just down here where we see it every day, where there has been waste. Right now, we spend $37,000 a month just on rent for the Columbia River Crossing project when they have empty offices at WashDOT off of Gear Road and State Route 500. And so what am I asking of you? I'm asking you to vote for me, because what you're going to get is you're going to get a philosophy of creative thinking, of innovative thinking, of not being happy with the kind of statistics that you've heard today. I am going to work for you because I recognize that if we don't have a change, we are going to become like our neighbors to the south, California. We aren't that far off. We have school districts right now that are on the verge of having bankruptcies. We don't want to do that, and we shouldn't have to do that. We don't need to do that. We can have a fresh start and do better, and together we can do better. So vote for me, please. Thank you so much.
Okay, you have a website?
I do. Thank you. It's www.debbiepeterson.org. It's very easy.
And if they want to email you or contact you any other way?
Please call me at 360-356-4437. You will find on my website, it's very dense. I have a lot of solutions there. I'm hoping that you look at it. Take a cup of coffee, maybe take your lunch, and sit down. You can be there for a couple hours and read through it, because it does give you what I will do when I'm up there. And so I want to thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I really appreciate you letting me come. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.